This is the Temple Baptist Church Podcast. This message was originally recorded on August 12, 2007. We're broadcasting from Sullivan, Missouri, which is about 60 miles southwest of St. Louis. And we're right on I-44 in between St. Louis and Rolla. So if you're ever in the area on a Sunday morning and you want to stop by, we have service times at 8:15 and 10:45, Bible study at 9:30. Or like always, you will find a podcast on our website every week. You can find future and past podcasts there. Just go to www.tpcsullivan.com. And if you want more information about our church, that'll be on the website as well. Today's message is delivered by our pastor, Scott Perry, who's preaching on ruthless trust found in Psalm 34, 1 through 10.
Brennan Manning has written a book entitled Ruthless Trust. I was intrigued by the title, and while I've not read the book, I read some excerpts from it. He tells the story in the book of John Kavanaugh. He went to work for 3 months at the House of the Dying in Calcutta, India. He went not only to give help, but to receive it. He was seeking a clear answer as how best to spend the rest of his life. The first morning he was there, he met Mother Teresa. And she asked, "What can I do for you?" Kavanaugh asked her to pray for him. "What do you want me to pray for?" she asked. And he voiced a request that he had long been burdened about and had come half a world seeking the answer for. He said, "Pray that I have clarity." To that simple but sincere request, she said firmly, "No, I will not do that." When he asked her why, she said, "Clarity is the last thing you are clinging to and must let go of." When Kavanaugh commented that she always seemed to have the clarity that he longed for, she laughed. "I have never had clarity. What I have always had is trust. So I will pray that you trust God." Ruthless Trust is the title of the message borrowed from Manning's book. And the passage that we study together today is in Psalm 34, beginning with verse 1. Ruthless trust is proven trust. Ruthless trust is tested trust. Ruthless trust is the kind of trust that isn't simply bantered about in the comments of preachers, teachers, and Bible study attendees. Ruthless trust has been in the trenches. It gets dirty as life does, and it walks the path that inevitably comes to us all. Ruthless trust is the kind of faith that says, "Jesus, I love you no matter what. I will praise you and serve you regardless of the circumstance or even my own emotional state, and I am committed to you as long as I have breath, knowing that when that breath ceases, I will come to you forever and forever. I have a very simple world view. It is a God-centered worldview, as I have shared with you before. It is the same worldview that I want to see played out in every book I read, every story told, and every movie I see. When it isn't, I walk away disappointed or frustrated, sometimes even angry. When it is, I feel a sense of closure and completion that gives me joy and brings me peace. Here's my worldview. It's very easy to remember. God wins, therefore so do I. Evil loses, therefore I am secure forevermore." Now what happens between now and then? I can't say. Some of it will be very hard, some of it not so hard. But in the end, good, God wins. That's easy. It's easy to remember. It's easy to focus on. It's easy to know that no matter what I'm experiencing today, I can have the kind of ruthless trust that enables me to know that in the end, I'm going to win. because God's going to win and I belong to God. I can tell a story. I can bring good news. I can deliver a message. I can proclaim the truth knowing God's going to win. Ruthless trust, then, we see lived out in the life of David. David shares with us the 34th Psalm. He says in verses 1 through 3, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. Verses 1 through 3 speak to us of the commitment to praise that is found in this psalm and encouraged in all of us who are to have the same ruthless trust. Commitment to praise teaches us that we have to make a decision. If you are here today, and as we have gone through a time of worship and praise, and you said, well, I just didn't feel like it, or that didn't move me, or the music minister didn't lead me the way I wanted, then you are mistaken and very close, if not well beyond, sinning. Be careful. Be careful when you make excuses for your own obstinance. Be careful when you make excuses for your own ignorance. Be careful when you pass blame to someone else for a prideful and sinful position you are unwilling to alter. Be careful. I speak to you as a friend. I speak to you a word of warning that you may not be deceived by the evil one. I speak to you the truth of God led by the Spirit. A commitment to praise is your deal, not anybody else's. A commitment to praise belongs exclusively to the worshiper. A commitment to praise requires then an attitude that says, I will bless the Lord. Listen to Him. I will bless the Lord at all times, and His praise shall continually be in my mouth. Bless the Lord. It is a commitment that comes from a decision. It is a commitment that requires intentionality. It is a commitment that demands not only a step of faith, but also a continuation of the course. I will bless the Lord when I feel like it. I will bless the Lord when I don't. I will bless the Lord when those around me do. And I will bless the Lord when they won't. Recently, I was asked the question, why don't people in Temple Baptist Church raise their hands when they worship? I responded by saying, why do people in other places raise their hands when they worship? I said, do you feel like raising your hands in worship? The person said, yes. I said, then why don't you? I'm afraid I'll offend somebody. Let me assure you, the only reason people raise their hands in worship in some places and don't in others is because there is a sense of freedom and there is a sense of leadership. If the freedom and the leadership that you have been given tells you to lift your hands in worship, that's a biblical thing to do. If it tells you not to, then that's fine too. But if you're saying to me, well, I would raise my hands in worship, but everybody else doesn't, then you're saying it the wrong way. You bless the Lord as He leads you to do. If He leads you to lift your hands, lift them. And if you don't want to, don't. Do not criticize those who do. Do not complain about those who don't. Just be genuine in your walk of faith. Bless the Lord as God has led you. Ruthless trust says, I will praise the Lord and I will do so no matter what. Notice not only he blesses the Lord, but he boasts in the Lord. My soul makes its boast in the Lord, verse 2 says. Let the humble hear and be glad. The boast in the Lord simply means that he finds his confidence. His bragging isn't in himself or his own abilities, but he has recognized his complete and utter dependence upon God. A ruthless trust is in a commitment to praise. Expresses a dependence on God. What are you depending on today? It's probably already let you down. If you're depending on your own ability to manage your life, it's probably already failed you. If you're depending on something else other than God, it's never going to be enough, no matter how much you try. Ruthless trust teaches us, out of a commitment to praise, that we learn to find our confidence in God and we express our dependence upon God. Dependence upon God is not an easy thing. It is, however, a profound thing. Boast in the Lord. The more you express that, the more that you practice that, the more you rehearse that, the more you do that, the better you'll become. Commitment to praise also works to build up others. Listen to what David does when he invites everyone to join with him. Magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt His name together. Build up others in the Lord is what he's teaching us to do. So we bless the Lord, we boast in the Lord, and we build up others in the Lord. A commitment to praise should bring us together and should unite us in a way that nothing else can. A commitment to praise is not something that just simply says, you know, I'm going to a praise service. But a commitment to praise is an expression of your own heart. It is an expression of your own life, your desire, the truth that God has placed within you. Commitment to praise is not dependent upon anybody but you and God. And that's it. David used his commitment to praise to bless the Lord, to practice and strengthen his confidence in the Lord as he boasted in Him, but to build others up in the Lord as he welcomed them, to magnify the Lord and to exalt His name together. Not only do we need a commitment to praise if we are to build ruthless trust, but we also need confidence in prayer. Listen to the words of the psalmist again in verses 4 through 7. I sought the Lord and He answered me, and He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to Him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear Him, and He delivers them. Confidence in prayer is something that we see that results in deliverance. Prayer results in deliverance. He said, I sought the Lord and He answered me and delivered me from my fears. Notice He did not deliver him from his battles. He did not deliver him from his challenges. He did not deliver him from his hardships or his sufferings or his anxieties that so often seem to be a part of the energy that is required to face these things. He delivered him from his fear. I think that we associate the two, meaning that if He delivers me, I won't have to face the challenge, I won't have to face the hardship, I won't have to deal with the pain, I won't have to walk through the process. And that's not at all what it means. He delivers us from the fear, giving us the confidence to face whatever comes. Deliverance comes through the power of prayer. And the more we pray, the more we trust God, the more we depend upon Him, the more He delivers us. And so he said, I was delivered. I sought the Lord. He answered me, first of all. Does God answer your prayers? A lot of times we say, no. God doesn't answer my prayer. Is no not an answer? If someone says, may I have that, and that other person says, no, have they not answered you? I would count that as an answer. I've used that answer a lot raising children over the years. I was listening to a mom pushing a basket in Walmart the other day, and a child sitting in the little kid's part of the basket seat, and the child saying, can I have that? She said, no. Can I have that? No. And I thought to myself, every aisle is going to be filled, and she was just very calmly pushing the basket and answering every time that child spoke. Can I have that? No. Can I have that? No. And down the line they went. I wondered to myself how many times that child would ask that question and how many times mom would give that same answer. Would she be able to go through the entire store and say that over and over again? Because I wouldn't. No, you can't have that, but you can have this. No is an answer. It may not be the one you wanted. You know the one I really don't like? I can take no. Lord, I really need no. Okay. I'll adjust. Here's the one I don't like. Lord, could you help? Wait. Wait? What, are you out of your mind? I can't wait. If I could have waited, I wouldn't be asking you about this. I wouldn't be talking to you about this. If I had the ability to wait, why would I be so intense in this moment? Do you not see what's going on around me? Do you not see what's going on inside of me? Wait. That's the one I don't like. And yet wait is just as much an answer. Does God answer your prayer? I think He does. You just may not be paying attention to the answers He gives. Sometimes He says no. Sometimes He says wait. Sometimes He alters the result, but still answers the immediate need. Maybe the reason you haven't been getting an answer is because you're asking in the wrong way. Confidence in prayer leads to deliverance, but it is deliverance from fear. Those who look to Him, He says, are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. In other words, there's direction. He's talking about the outward expression. Those who look to God, those who pray and spend time with Him, those who develop the relationship and the dependence that comes in that relationship, those who have the kind of ruthless trust that says, no matter what, Lord, I'm going to walk with You, those are the ones who have an appearance that seems to almost shine like radiance. That's why He says their faces, those who look to Him, are radiant. And their faces are not ashamed. In other words, what's He describing? Confidence. People who know where they're going and how they're going to get there. That's direction. God gives us direction for our lives. When you ask Him, He will direct you. He will lead you in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Trust in the Lord, and He shall direct thy path or make your paths straight. The Bible speaks to us and God confirms that we can have confidence in prayer, for in that time of prayer, as that relationship grows and as the intimacy is shared, we can be assured that we shall receive deliverance and direction, but also defense. Look at what He says in verse 6. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. For the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear Him and delivers them. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear Him. There is a strong defense to be found. One of the reasons that we do not seek a stronger defense, or we do not depend more often on the Lord's defensive posture on our behalf, is because we don't realize the attack that we're under. We forget the assault that is upon us. We assume that life is just what life is, and so we go through it, and we just take those steps. And every once in a while, it seems like the evil one kind of sticks his head up a little further than normal, and we realize, wait a minute, this is kind of a battle. But I hear people talk about it this way all the time. They talk about, boy, I've just gone through a real period of spiritual warfare. There is no period of spiritual warfare, folks. Spiritual warfare is life. Every moment of every day is spiritual warfare. Make no mistake. God didn't call you to be an observer. He called you to be a warrior. You were not saved to sit. You were saved to fight. And we don't do that very well, and we don't do it very often. And yet that is exactly what the Bible teaches us, and that is the direction that He is leading us. And when we pray and when we trust God, we are in the midst of a battle, but in that battle, He assures us that we're not alone. So it's not our abilities that we depend upon. It's not our weapons that we fight with. It's not our armor that we are covered by. But it is His. For the battle belongs to the Lord. For those who trust in Him and those who walk according to His ways, the battle belongs to the Lord. So we are in a spiritual warfare, but we can have confidence because we're not alone. He provides the defense that enables us to continue to have the ruthless trust. A commitment to praise and a confidence in prayer will lead to the kind of trust that instills in us not only a desire to serve, but also the willingness to continue the course set before us. And then he offers us this, a convincing invitation. Look at verses 8 through 10. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in Him. Oh, fear the Lord, you His saints, for those who fear Him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. He has set before us everything that we need to know about this ruthless trust that can enable us to live life believing and trusting in God even when the clarity that we seek is not present. This ruthless trust that enables us to depend on God even when others don't. This ruthless trust that instills in us and is inspired in us by our commitment to praise, by our confidence in prayer, also invites us to experience something we've not known before. What is this invitation that the psalmist offers? Well, the first thing that he invites us to do is to experience God. Taste and see. Up to this point, it's all been talk. Up to this point, everything that I've given you have been principles and teachings. But now he says, take the step. Do something with what you've heard and what you've seen. Experience, taste and see. Embrace what you know and welcome what God has given. Experience is the only thing that can enable you to truly access what God is offering you. Unfortunately, so many see their religious affiliations as nothing more than intellectual pursuits. And it's not intellectual only. The mind must be engaged, but before the process is going to be completed, the body must follow and every part of us must commit. It is the experience as we taste and see, as we take hold of God, as we trust in God in the midst of life's experiences, as we walk with God, no matter what, that's where it makes a difference. Experience Him. Experiencing God comes as we have faith in Him, but it also comes as we embrace Him and walk through the process of life with Him. He says in verse 9, fear the Lord, you His saints, for those who fear Him have no lack. Not only does He invite us to taste and see through our own experience, but He invites us to trust God. The fear of the Lord means trust in Him. Fear means exactly what it says. I think there should be a very healthy respect that goes well beyond just a healthy respect as it relates to God. There is a fear of who He is. His awesome power should cause in us a sense of awe and wonder that is so closely related to utter fear that you probably couldn't distinguish between the two. But fear in the Lord also speaks of trust. You do not fear someone that you do not believe has the ability and the power to back up what he says and who he is. Trust in God. Those who fear the Lord, those who place their trust in Him shall have no lack. It means there won't be anything that you will face that you will not have the resources to deal with. Again, it doesn't mean that you sidestep the problems. It doesn't mean that you'll have an abundance of everything that you've ever imagined. He's not talking about material wealth. He's talking about the inner resources necessary to live the life that He has set before you and to accomplish the purpose for which He called you. If you will trust in the Lord, experience God, trust God, and believe in the provision of God. Verse 10, the young lion suffers want and hunger, and the lion, especially the young lion, is the most efficient hunter he could think of. But he said, for those who seek the Lord, they shall lack no good thing. The Bible tells us that every good and perfect gift comes from above, coming down from the Father of lights. Do you believe that? God is the owner. You are the steward. We so often forget that we belong to God and everything that we have. When our possessions possess us, we lose sight of the provision that can only come from God. When our calendars dictate our lives rather than simply express them, then we have lost our direction and control that should have been yielded to God. When others around us or culture and society in general determines values and morals and principles, then our trouble is far deeper than simple change is going to overcome. Our provision must be in Him. As long as He is the source and the resource, as long as He is the owner, the controller, and the guide, and we are but the servants and the stewards and the children, then everything stays in its proper place. Pride is held at bay, humility opens the doorway, and we experience Him and trust Him and grow in Him. But when we close any of those avenues and we start to trust in our own abilities, we start to see ourselves as owners and possessors, we start to manipulate and manage to our own advantage rather than for His glory, then we lose sight and we lose contact and we lose our provision. Our provision is in God, and we find a convincing invitation that welcomes us to experience God, to trust and grow in God, and to find the ultimate resource provided only through God. So how about you? What's your trust like today? Is it just an average, regular, old kind of trust? Or is it a ruthless trust? Release your need for clarity. Give up your demand for answers before you take the next step. And just simply embrace God and trust Him. He will direct your path. May we stand for prayer.
We want to thank you once again for joining us for our podcast. If you want to visit our website, go to www.tbcsalamanca.com. And you can find more information and more podcast information there as well. If you'd like to contact us or just send us an email and tell us how we're doing, just Okay. We want to thank you once again for joining us for our podcast. Remember that you can find more information on our website. Simply go to www.tbcsullivan.com. Also, if you'd like to contact us or just send us an email and let us know how we're doing, you can send that to tbc@tbcsullivan.com.